Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Well, this is Point of View.
This is absolutely nothing, so maybe someone...
Hello, Helen. Hello.
Is it in?
You're in and you're live.
Oh, cool.
Helen Ziller is in studio with us, as you can hear.
We are busy fidgeting
and fiddling, and
we're here now, we're settled.
Welcome. Come. Thank you so much for coming through to Kaya.
It's a pleasure, Pumelo. Lovely to be with you.
Lovely to have you. And I just want to start off by saying, you know, our condolences go to the DA family. I just think that as a country, I don't think just the DA, we really, really need to honor one of your own, James Self, who gave so much of himself to this country. And I think he was part of the people that actually put together the Constitution, if I stand to be corrected.
Well, he's one of many people who was at the Cadessa negotiations back then in Kempton Park. And it's a great, great loss to South Africa.
Yes.
And to the DA, obviously, and most particularly to his family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it about 30 years he spent in Parliament?
I don't think 30 years.
No?
But it was a very, very long time. He started as a researcher.
Of course,
with
not
Helen
30 years
Sisman,
because we are now.
You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, he was in the old parliament.
Yes.
And this new parliament.
And the new one as well.
So, yeah, you know, he's been, he might well have been in parliament, actually, if you count the old parliament for 30 years.
I think they say 30 years.
Yeah, well, yeah, he might well have been when I actually add up all the numbers now, yes.
And obviously, when you're sitting here, you really have really, I wouldn't say reap the rewards, but you've really come to appreciate his contribution within the party, structurally, what he had to offer, especially where you're sitting right now at the DA.
Yes, indeed. I knew what kind of a contribution he was making when I was the leader and he was running the organization, you know, and being the interface between the organization and the politicians.
Yeah.
So it's a tough job. I know exactly what it's like, and I appreciated him all those years back. Yeah. I didn't have to wait till I was in the job to appreciate him.
So let's, I was just saying to you earlier off air that we've had a full conversation with one of your party members about the manifesto. So, I mean, if and when you want to talk about it, we'll go there. And people are also very welcome to give us a call. I know it's 600-00959. But we're also going to talk about other things. South Africans want to hear your opinion on other things. Were you surprised at the reaction some people gave with regards to the your ad?
No, not at all. I mean, South Africa is full of outrage manufacturing every day. And it's full of people looking for reasons to be offended. And many people trawl the internet every single day searching for reasons to be offended. I call it offense archaeology. And, of course, we didn't expect anything different.
Mm-hmm. And when you reflect now, do you feel that this possibly gave the opposition a leg up?
No, not at all. The DA can pride itself on always having been right 10 years before anybody else gets it, I'm afraid to say. I'd like not to have to say it, but it just happens to be true. You can go back on almost every issue. I'd love to write a book on what we were saying, how we were getting lambasted by the media, and then 10 years afterwards, when the media get it, then they present it as a new idea, things that we've been saying for 10 years
already.
Give us
an example.
Well, stop Zuma. When we said stop Zuma in 2009, the place went completely mad. There's a summary of all the outraged reactions that I've got. Everybody from the business day to everybody who was anybody commenting on the media, how negative, racist, this, that. After 9 wasted years, state capture, corruption at eye-watering levels, the collapse of state-owned entities, the collapse of the railways and the harbours, the collapse of the electricity generating capacity. People think, oh dear, do you think having Zuma as president was such a good idea? Maybe we should have stopped Zuma. 10 years too late. So the DA prides itself on being able to see the trajectory of politics and how things are going and how they will end up. We did exactly the same with CADA deployment in 1997.
Let's talk a little bit. Let's stay with Zuma for a second. He's re-emerged now as with the MK party. Do you believe he's a threat only to the ANC, or there's a bigger threat here? And if he does emerge as a political party that garners quite a substantial majority, what does the South Africa look like with him as one of those who will be in power?
Well, that's why we did our flag advert. That's exactly the message we were conveying. If South Africa ends up with a coalition of the ANC, MK, and the EFF, there'll be nothing left of our constitution. You saw Zuma the other day saying, no, if he gets in, he's going to curb the power of the judges and do a whole range of other things. He's basically saying he'll get rid of the constitution. And we're trying to say to people, do you know what the implications are of that? People may say, oh, so what? I don't care. They will care deeply. There will be such a flight of investment. The rand will crash through the floor. Not that people who haven't got any rands really care about that, but when you see that there's really no jobs and unemployment goes to at least 60%, as it already is for youth unemployment, and we have a collapsing economy, and our institutions of democracy wither and die, then people will say, why didn't anyone tell us that this was going to happen? And we say, yes, we did, in the most graphic way possible. In the most graphic way possible. And when everybody is jumping up and down and getting all excited about it, think of what we're saying. And it's good that people get excited about it, because it's worth getting excited about. It's worth getting very worried about. And when people say, oh, no, well, big mistake to have that ad, I'd say, well, what did you think of our other three ads? And then they say, which ads? They don't even remember which ones they are. They can't even tell you that we had other ads. So that shows you that that was an ad that drove the point home. And the very question you're asking now underlines that. Because, indeed, we got the point home. We said, if you want this country to have its institutions totally eroded, and that is going to impact every single person in this country profoundly and deeply. No accountability, no rule of law. People should be very worried about that. And they heard it from the DA first.
What will it take for the DA to win an outright majority without the need to go into a coalition arrangement?
Well, in proportional representation systems, you don't get outright majorities except in entirely anomalous situations. So, for example, it's been a complete anomaly over the last 30 years in a proportional representation electoral system to have the ANC getting an overall majority. Especially when you don't have thresholds, as you do in all other proportional representation systems, you have thresholds. So in Denmark, you can't get any seats at all if you're a political party contesting for power there, if you don't get at least 3%. In Germany, you can't get any seats unless you get at least 5%. That would remove a lot of parties from being in contention at all. So in our system, we don't have any threshold. So that encourages everyone who wants to start a political party to start a political party. And who knows, if you're Gwamanda, Mr. Gwamanda, who stood for the Al-Jamar party, I think it was, and didn't even get 1.5% of the vote, but now he's the mayor of Johannesburg. It's a crazy system. So the bottom line is this. If we want stable coalitions, which are the future, they're going to be coalitions. I've been in coalitions since 1999, so I know quite a bit about coalitions. You're going to have to bring in thresholds, because you can't have 5, 6, 7, 8 one-person parties making things massively unstable. And you've got to accept that having your voting numbers in the 20s is big in a proportional representation system. Angela Merkel was Chancellor of Germany with 27% of the vote. That was big in a proportional representation system.
But surely the DA does want to grow its voter base.
Of course we do.
So
and we are doing it.
Yeah.
We are doing it.
But substantially
we only went back once. And then we fixed it, and now we're doing it again.
To be a political party that will maybe not necessarily get the 50%, as you said.
No one will again.
But to be the one that actually gets the most, what do you think it'll take?
Yes, we have to be the biggest party. And what it'll take is voters who understand that good governance governance matters a lot. And it really fundamentally affects your prospects, affects your life chances, and affects everything from the way a child is born to the way a child graduates from school, whether they can get a job, etc. And if you don't have stable and reliable electricity, good, clean, pure water that is a reliable source, public transport that works, refuse removal that works, sewage systems that work, schools that work, hospitals that work, a government that is accountable, doesn't steal the money, and isn't corrupt. If you don't have any of those things, you don't have investment and you don't have jobs. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing that in more and more places. The only province where unemployment is going down quite dramatically is in the Western Cape. It's because there is good government.
So the DA obviously is quite concerned. You say one of your main priorities is jobs. Unemployment is a big factor.
One.
The economy
Number
is a
one.
Big factor.
It's the biggest issue.
And you've spoken about some of the things that make it difficult for this economy to grow. Mm. And to fix that, it takes some time. Immediately, what would the DA prioritize?
The biggest obstacle to economic growth is unreliable electricity. Mm. That is the biggest obstacle. The second biggest obstacle that business people have identified as to why they're not coming to invest and why they're not increasing their investment is because of all the government interference in how businesses are run. Their insistence on who to appoint, in what ratio shares have to be allocated, all of that kind of thing eventually gets a huge company like Shell saying, enough, we've had enough of this, we're out of here. And it should worry us hugely that that is happening. So, for example, many companies are now taking their headquarters outside South Africa. Even indigenous companies that were built and grown here have done that. And that should worry people a great deal. So what we should be doing is looking at all the obstacles to investment, all of them, starting with electricity, continuing with all the government interference in the way businesses can be run.
Going, so that's policy reviewing of some
course,
of these policies.
All of them, labor regime, everything. And the fixing of local government. No one is going to invest if they cannot get clean water, reliable energy, sewage systems that work, and roads that you can drive on, and reliable public transport. I mean, Bacoma has moved out of the Eastern Cape where they were because they say they can't travel with their rusks, their product on the road. Lydenburg said, we've pulled out. There was a Parmalat factory there. They said, we're pulling out. We can't get clean water. That's what happens. Hundreds of jobs get lost.
You made the point that coalitions are here to stay. This is going to be our future now. But you've seen how difficult it is to manage local government with these coalitions. So, I mean, how do you think we're going to strike that balance? Local governments are struggling. Well, us here in Gauteng are experiencing that a lot.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you are. And I've said one of the things, we've got bills before Parliament that we have to pass in order to have stable coalitions. The first thing we need to do is have a threshold. And, you know, if we in Nelson Mandela Bay, the DA was the biggest party. We got 40% of the vote. The ANC was the second biggest. They got 39% of the vote. For us to get from 40% to 50 plus one, person, we needed 11 parties. Mm-hmm. Now that's crazy. If we'd had a threshold, we would have needed three. Now you can manage three in a coalition, but you can't manage 11. Because most of the people, not all, but most of the people are there because what's in it for me? What can I get out of this? Where can I shop around for the best deal? And then they jump from one side to the other. It's got nothing to do with principle or policy.
Those proposals, I believe your party member has submitted them.
Siviwe Gwahube
has been speaking a lot about them. And are they getting traction? Because I think everybody in a way agrees with you there.
Yes, absolutely, as they should. I mean, if people want stable, good government, they are going to have to understand the thresholds are necessary. Every single part of the world that has stable, functioning coalitions has thresholds.
Can we take calls? 086-000-0959. Javas is calling from Zola in Soweto. Good evening and welcome.
How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for calling. Good evening and welcome. And Helen Zales here.
I just have a few questions for Helen. And we need an honest answer, not a political answer. Because sometimes they tend to answer with political wind. One, I'm having a serious problem with DA when it comes to our African brothers and sisters. They all, once they reach a threshold of leadership, they resign. The main reason for resignation is one, it's racism within the DA. How is Helen dealing with that racism within DA? Then secondly, if you say you love your country, why would you do a so robust advert in burning your own flag while you should be doing adverts that deals with the crisis within the country? Then the last one, in Tshwane, the mayor that was led by DA, the mayor of DA, gave someone a tender illegally and he was not charged by the same DA. But the same DA is saying they are fighting corruption. But where they lead, there is a crisis of racism, there is a crisis of corruption. But because of its DA, there is nothing that is happening. So we are asking for an honest answer, because what she's saying now, we can't trust.
Thank you, Jarvis.
Hello? Well, Jarvis, we have got 452 black African public representatives. We've got many leaders who are black South Africans. We have Solly Masimanga, who is our provincial leader in Gauteng and our premier candidate in Gauteng. We've got Jane Sithole, who is our provincial leader in Mpumalanga. I can go on and on. We've got Sivibe Wagube, who is our chief whip in Parliament. And we have, as I say, 452 public representatives in all kinds of places and in leadership positions. One thing we probably did not do correctly was to propel people into leadership positions without them having to go through the stages and phases that all the rest of us had to go through, because there are those phases for a reason. You get experience, you get knowledge, you get strategic skills, you get a whole range of skills. And I think that if you come in at the very top, or if you don't go through that process, it makes it very, very difficult for a person to lead in that kind of context. So politics is very, very difficult. You know, many businessmen and others think, ah, this is so easy. If they just got it right and hired a few PR people, it would all be wonderful. I mean, we saw what happened to Roger Jardine. Yeah. You know, they had as much money as they wanted. Mm-hmm. They just could not get it right because they didn't realize how difficult it is. So to get to the top of a political party as a political leader, you really need to go through the ropes. You need to preferentially have been a councillor, an MP, worked on the ground for many years, been a branch chair, slogged it out in election after election, taken the hit, the criticism, taken the heat. And it is tough. It is tough. It is vicious. And in South Africa, it's even more vicious, especially if you're a black leader in the DA, because your own black brothers and sisters call you a sellout. That's racist. They call you a coconut.
Within the party?
No. I'm talking about not within the party. I'm talking about all the criticism outside. No one outside had a nice thing to say, let's say, about Musi Maimane until he left and then he became the hero. You see, that shows the mindset of people outside who want to bully and criticize and fight with black leaders who make it to the top in the DA because they've got a political agenda. And it is unbelievably hard to take that. It's very hard. I know what it's like to be battered every single day, and you've got your family and you've got this and you've got that. It's not easy and it's not nice. And so you've got to develop a really thick skin and a backbone of steel. And for especially for black South Africans, they get battered in a way in the DA by outsiders, not people inside the DA. Not people inside the DA. That makes it very, very difficult. So, you know, one thing we've learned is that people must climb the ladder, as we've all had to do. I've been involved in politics since 1967. Probably, Pumelo, before your mother was born, I was involved.
No.
Well, you look very young. But, you know, I mean, I've been involved in politics for many, 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 many years. And I worked from the bottom up as a person helping run by-elections in Parktown, Johannesburg.
The last question was about Randa Williams.
Oh. There was absolutely no proof that Randall had done anything corrupt. I mean, you know, Jarvis comes here and he says there was proof that he was corrupt. There was none. That's the whole point. He went out on a public participation process to consider somebody who was interested in some refurb of a power station. But that's all he did. He didn't do a contract with them. He didn't sign anything with them. He didn't get them in to do it. He went out on public participation on the desirability of doing it. That's all.
And so why did the DA feel the need to ask him to step down?
That wasn't because of that. It was because of the audit outcomes.
Yes, that was, yeah, exactly.
Well, the audit outcomes, he got a very negative audit outcome. Mm-hmm. And we didn't know it was coming. He hadn't told us. And then he knew for a long time before we knew. Mm. And when you get an adverse audit finding, which is the worst thing you can get.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because of that power station.
No,
issue.
No, it wasn't.
It was everything else, you know? Yes. And that's why somebody like Celia Brink is having such a tough time mm-hmm. turning it around. Mm-hmm. I mean, his audit outcomes have improved, and they've improved more than any other place that got an adverse outcome. But, you know...
But as a DA, I mean, that he didn't, number one, through the ranks and through the right channels within the DA, that he didn't mention that he has got some challenges, that the Auditor General eventually makes the point that, you know, this is what's happened under his watch. What is, you just allow him to go? You don't hold him accountable, or are there ways
well,
in which
did,
you...
Well, we did hold him accountable. Of course we hold him accountable. Of course we hold him accountable. He's not the mayor anymore, is he?
That's not enough.
Well, what do you want us to do?
I don't know, but surely your process
is... He wasn't corrupt. There was nothing. He wasn't corrupt.
Well, I mean...
Look, let me tell you, I feel sorry for Randall Williams. Yeah. I genuinely do.
This is the point.
Let me tell you. I genuinely do, because the ANC in the province put Tshwane under administration. And they had a positive cash balance in the reserves, and when the ANC was taken out of administration by the Supreme Court of Appeal, who said that that administration had been unlawful and unconstitutional to begin with, there was no money left, nothing. They'd looted the whole thing, and poor old Randall had to try and turn it around.
I don't think Randall is poor old Randall. I think Helen, to your point about the kind of difficulties Celia's Brink is facing right now, is one of the reasons is how Randall Williams left the place. And we really are asking you, because you pride yourself in holding everybody accountable, in making sure that administratively the DA runs things properly. And so we would have wanted to see, you know, more.
Let me just tell you something. Mm-hmm. Randall took over again 18 months before the election, after the ANC had looted the place, and then he had to try and fix it. You do not know how difficult it is for Celia to try and fix it.
We do. We speak to him all the time.
You have no idea. You have no idea. Whatever he tells you is minor compared to the real issue of trying to turn around an administration riddled with corruption. So, for example, they cut off big businesses who aren't paying, and then those guys go behind and they pay somebody in the administration to switch on the electricity again for, let's say, a bribe of 200 Rand, and then they continue not paying. I mean, when the place is so riddled with corruption, it's going to take 10 years to fix it.
Moshe, thanks for your patience. Good evening and welcome.
Hi, Pamela Nikas. How are you?
We're good, thanks. Go ahead.
I've got probably about three questions, but before I...
Moshe, like, if you don't
one
mind.
Each, please.
Yeah, you know, Helen has got to... He's got a, she's got to leave, right. She's been so gracious with her time.
What I'm trying to ask here is that, you know, every big political party, and for the DA stature in this country, not to have an opinion about Palestine is quite worrisome. Because if you understand our struggle and that of Palestine has been part of us since the dawn of democracy, or even during apartheid... And having understood sort of like it's our sister struggle kind of thing, and the very mum about it, where else people are dying and all of this stuff. And I know it's far-fetched, but it plays into the geopolitics that the DA is bringing. And also for them to go and ask international people to come and look at our stuff, where else something is happening at not at our doorstep, but it's happening in the world and they're quiet about it.
So do you have a question, Moshe, or is it just a comment?
No, the question, why are they mum about the Palestinian issue?
The answer is very simple. We're not. We've issued a lot of statements on it. So, you know. Next question. Let's go to the next caller.
You did. You got the answer, right, Moshe? They haven't been quiet on the issue of Palestine. Lulamila is calling from the Vaal. Good evening, Lulamila.
Good evening, Primelo, and to Helen. I just want to check with her. Why are they opposed to the land question? Why they still want to cling to the old apartheid system? Section 25 says the land must be returned. And if she is a proponent of democracy, she must acknowledge that Africans were dispossessed by whites, Dutch, and English. So the land must come back to its rightful owners. Two, why are there still fires in Khayelitsha, Delft, and all these quarter camps, yet they are living in luxury? There are no fires in Camps Bay. Lastly, why do they call people from the Eastern Cape refugees? I think that is a racist, and that is also a colonialist view about us as Africans.
Thanks, Lulamia. Helen?
I think he's asking not why do we reject the land question. Of course we don't reject the land question. We've got a very good land restitution policy in the DA. And we just don't like the way the ANC is running it. The ANC has spent so much money on failed land restitution programs that they could have bought a third of agricultural land at market prices for the money they've thrown down the drain with these failed schemes, very few of which have worked. And the ANC has actually admitted that these restitution schemes have not worked, because the big test is, does land that is restituted become productive or remain productive? Because we need food in this country and we need jobs in this country. And the key thing about land is that it should be generating food and jobs. Otherwise, it's just expensive dirt. And so what we need across South Africa is to make our land much more productive and to make it a lot more equitable in ownership. So we completely agree with that. But we say that the first challenge for land reform is not promoting expropriation without compensation. How is that going to make land more productive? How is that going to create jobs on land? It's not. In fact, what happened at Zebedila, which was once the biggest orange farm in the world and the most productive orange farm in the world, it's now a wasteland, producing no food and no jobs. So we must look at our most productive and fertile land in South Africa. And that is in KwaZulu-Natal, by far the best land, and in the Eastern Cape. Beautiful rains, beautiful soils, fabulous land. Why does that land produce so few jobs and so little food? That's the key question. Why does so much of South Africa's agricultural production happen in a province that is on very barren land and has very poor agricultural land for the most part, which is the Western Cape? And that is where most of our agricultural exports to get foreign valuta, overseas foreign exchange, comes from. Why is that? And so just about 70% of all the land in KwaZulu-Natal is in black hands. 70% of the land is in black hands. The question we have to ask about land reform is, why is that land not creating food and jobs? And it's because the ownership structures of that land. The land that was in black hands, as Lulamila rightly says, was very much controlled, very like in the Ingonyama Trust, by the chiefs. And no one had a right to own that land, to have title to that land, to farm that land, and to protect the right of access to that land from arbitrary dispossession. And that's why you haven't had this wonderful, rich, fertile land exploding in agricultural production and job creation. So it seems crazy to then want to introduce expropriation without compensation, which takes away the very critical thing that leads to productivity on the land, which is secure tenure. Instead of taking away the secure tenure that exists, give secure tenure where it doesn't exist. And that's mostly secure tenure that isn't there because of traditional land systems. So it would be disastrous to take away and to spread the system that leads to the lack of productivity on the land and to scrap the system that ensures productivity on the land. It's like the NHI. Why are you introducing a system that will destroy all healthcare instead of bringing in systems that improve all healthcare?
I'll quickly take a call from Anonymous. Anonymous, thanks for your patience. Good evening and welcome.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for calling, Anonymous.
Yeah, you're talking about the ANC and about apartheid in it. But sorry to say this, I was listening to a podcast of Gaitan McKenzie and Kenny Kuni, and they say they will deal with crime toughly if they come into power. Kenny Kuni.
Okay, and so what do you have to say, Anonymous?
What I have to say is, does it look like Kenny Kunyane will come into power because they're talking about also deporting illegal immigrants and that. So I don't have much to say. So I don't know what they plan to do, Gaitan McKenzie and Kenny Kunyane.
Anonymous, is that a question for Helen Ziller?
Pardon?
Is that a question for Helen Ziller?
It was, yes.
Okay. Helen?
Right, well, I can't answer for Kenny Kunene and for Gaitan McKenzie, obviously. They must answer for themselves, but they both have criminal records for fraud. And so, you know, maybe it takes a thief to catch a thief. I don't know. You know, they must ask Gaitan McKenzie about
Perhaps he's asking about crime.
Well, you know, if you look at the place that has really dealt with crime, it's our LEAP officers in the Western Cape. It's the Cape Metro Police. They do incredible work, and that's why we want the power over the police devolved to the provinces so that we can actually manage the police service and get meaningful action on crime.
In your next federal Congress, are you expecting somebody to emerge to challenge Don Steenhuisen?
We'll see. We're a democratic organization. Anybody can put their hat in the ring. Anybody can put their hat in the ring in the DA.
Well, all the best for the upcoming elections. Thank you very much for coming through, Helen Ziller.
Thank you very much indeed.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.